entrepreneurs, technology, and food? Well, how about hope? There's a combination, and it's all coming together today. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the physical, the spiritual, the emotional, the psychological, and everything in between. Looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, namely Armenian Orthodoxy. This is episode number 574 of The Next Step. We're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Here, there is no plan B. When you fail, you repeat plan A. Yeah, we're not used to that, are we? Well, it is a plan. It is a plan of action. It is a type of business plan, isn't it? A model for business. But we're not used to it. Most business plans will tell you to have a plan B, a plan C. You know, have options in front of you. But what if you don't have options? We're not used to that. We're not used to circumstances, life without options. We have a whole slew of options we can have in our lives. But there are places, there are circumstances in which life takes you, and you realize there is only plan A. And if you can't make plan A work, you go back to the drawing board and you make plan A work. It may take you a few times, but there is no plan B. Now, for most people, that would mean hopelessness, right? Plan A doesn't work. I've tried it, and there is no plan B or C, and so I'm hopeless. It's not going to happen. Negativity. No way. Not so with a group of women who were documented in a movie called Sufra. Yes, you remember. A couple weeks ago, I shared some thoughts about it with you. We had just seen it, and I came here on The Next Step and shared. Well, guess what? Today we have Ani Tarosyan. She is the CEO and co-founder of Dish Divi, the company that screened the movie and then had an opportunity for all of us to talk about it, to share the idea of what does it mean to take the spirit of entrepreneurship, the spirit that technology grants us, and place it into people, empowering people, and to overcome that hopelessness. It was an incredibly moving experience to watch this up on the screen, to have a chance to talk about it, but I wanted to share it with you because so many times we are stifled with what life gives us. And especially this week, it happens to be the week of Pentecost, when we talk about the birth of the church, according to Scripture, 50 days after Easter, the Holy Spirit descends and empowers a group of people that otherwise you wouldn't think could be empowered, right? I mean, talk about negativity. Their leader, their friend, their brother was taken in front of their eyes. He was beaten, humiliated, put on a cross. Life was over. It was over. There is no plan B. And then all of a sudden, a grave moves. All of a sudden, there is life after death. And all of a sudden, you have that opportunity to go out there and project that. That's what Pentecost is about, 50 days after Easter. How they are empowered, given the tools to do what has been commissioned for them to do. And like I said, this is a group of people that you otherwise wouldn't think could be empowered. And what? One was a fisherman. One was a tiller of the soil, and the other one was a tax collector hated by everybody. And all of a sudden, these people are empowered to go out there and change the world. That's what Pentecost is. And that's why I'm excited today. I'm excited with our guest today that she's going to be able to share with you some real world applications of what it means to overcome hopelessness, to find hope. You know, I always talk about that generation that came after the genocide. There's so much written about people who went through the genocide, the suffering. But I think what's fascinating is that generation that came afterwards. Why? Because I call them the God generation. I mean, we believe God took nothing and made something. You talk about a generation that did exactly that, taking nothing and creating something. The life, the family, what they have, everything. Everything around them. Think about it for a moment. The God generation. Taking nothing and making something. So that's where we're headed today. Talking about opportunities. Talking about empowerment. Talking about hope. We're going to be talking with Ani Torosyan. As I said a few moments ago, she happens to be the CEO and co-founder of DishDivi. Her background is in engineering with a degree in biomedical and electrical engineering from USC, yes, the University of Southern California. She brings those degrees as well as 18 years of experience in product management, branding, marketing, digital technologies, user experience design. She brings that with a great deal of strategic execution and technological know-how to the DishDivi table and now to our table. Here's an interview with Ani Torosyan. Thank you for joining us today, Ani.
Excited to be on the podcast.
A few weeks ago, you screened, DishDivi screened this incredible documentary called Sufra. And in there, we learned about refugees, but in a different way. We're all accustomed to hear about refugees. Tragically, we are today because we are facing the largest refugee problem this world has ever faced. But we got to know about generational refugees, something different, right? Mm-hmm. Something that we learned that people were born into refugee status, that for the last 60, 70 years, there are communities, camps within Lebanon, and as I assume throughout the world, that there are camps where people are born into this refugee status. And we saw this group of women and what's happening to them. I'm interested, and our listeners would be very interested to learn about how you came about learning about them, what prompted you to take this movie and share it, and give us the background on Sufra.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like you said, you know, this is an issue that sometimes we hear about in the news, but not necessarily understand the human component of what's happening in these refugees' lives every day. So kind of going back to what Sufra is a documentary that demonstrates or documents the plight of the refugees, the Palestinian refugees who have been living in refugee camps in Lebanon, right outside of Beirut, for the past 40 or even longer years. And you have these generational refugees who have been born into these camps, and that's pretty much all they know. One of the young women in the camps decided to not go down the sort of the status quo path of getting married and having children early on, and really wanted to create change for herself and for her community. And so she gathered around all, you know, her women friends, her female friends in the refugee camp, and started asking them, you know, what would you like to do to be productive? Like, if you could work, if you could have a job, if you could have a sense of purpose, what would you be passionate about? And all of them started talking about food, how they love cooking, and food was like a big joyful part of their day. So Mariam, the lead person in this documentary, creates a catering collective for these refugee women so that they can start cooking these delicious foods that they know how to cook and start selling them to other folks in the refugee camp, but then also outside of the refugee camp to just the general public in the city of Beirut. And they start to become popular, and they decide that they want to grow the operation and they want to get a food truck, but they can't because Palestinian refugees are not allowed to get a food truck. They're not allowed to have a business license. The women are not allowed to drive. I mean, there's just so many obstacles in their way. But Mariam, you know, is persistent, and she wants to persevere, and she has this hope to create change for her community. So, a couple months ago, I was on a business trip. I was flying to Argentina, actually, and I can't for the life of me fall asleep on a plane. So after working on my laptop for about 6 hours straight, I decided to watch a movie and saw that there was a documentary about food. And I was like, okay, let's watch this. And my husband was on the trip with me, and he was actually sleeping on the plane. But every 10 minutes I'm watching this film, I'm waking him up of like, I can't believe how much the mission of these women in Lebanon is so in line with what we're trying to do at Dish Divi. And it just really struck a chord with me of like how we can empower and give economic opportunities, how we're doing that in California, but how, women want that everywhere in the world. And in fact, some time into the movie, as Miriam was talking to the camera, there was a storefront sign that said Divi, D-I-V-V-Y, in the middle of Lebanon. And to me, that was like a literal sign that I had to get involved. And over the shoddy Wi-Fi going over Latin America, through LinkedIn and other, Google searching, I found the director and the producer of the movie and got in touch with them. And then long story short, fast forward a couple months later, we're hosting the screening of Sufra for the first time in the city of Glendale to bring attention to this big issue.
First of all, I can't do what you do. I cannot even work. I can't sleep on a plane, but I don't know how you work on a plane too.
It's just I get in the zone. I get in the zone.
Find that zone. But some of the things that really click with me is this idea of empowerment. And I think that's really, if you can back up a little bit, talk about what is Dish Divi, how it empowers, and then let's talk about that empowerment in terms of hope and offering something to people. So let our listeners know a little bit about Dish Divi and what it is.
Sure. So Dish Divi is a food tech platform, essentially. So I started Dish Divi about a year and a half ago here in Los Angeles. So we're a two-sided marketplace that connects what we call approved home cooks with hungry neighbors. So essentially, customers can go on our app or our website, put in their address, and find these certified and approved home cooks who live in their area and order homemade food from them. And on the other side of the platform, we have this network of talented home cooks that we're bringing on and empowering with this economic opportunity, where they've never had sort of this, there's so many of our cooks are so talented from a culinary standpoint, and they have this resource of their idle kitchen, and they've always dreamt about being in the commercial food space, but not necessarily had, the capital to open a restaurant and take that risk. They maybe have English as a second language, or they're immigrants, or whatever it may be. Getting into the commercial food space is very difficult and very risky, of course, where we sort of provide a platform that we democratize that process and get them to be able to like step into that and get their toes wet. And then also, on the legislative front, me and my team were instrumental in helping a piece of legislation in California get passed last year. It's called AB 626, the California Homemade Food Act, which essentially is paving the way in home kitchen operations that'll trickle all across the United States in the years to come, which allows each home cook in the state of California to generate up to $50,000 of revenue annually cooking from their home kitchen in a county permitted way. So this is huge. You look at the professional chef sphere, and so many of these top chefs are male dominated. They have to, have a lot of financial backing to get to that point, where now we're able to get these culinary talented folks, many of them women, many of them immigrants, access into this space. And so, yeah, it is empowering, and it provides a lot of hope for people.
I think this is what I really want to focus in on, empowerment and the opportunities that technology gives. Because, a few years ago when they had that film, Zuckerberg's film, what was that about Facebook? Yeah. And then, you sit and you think about it. What was the point that came out of that? That they just did it because technology was around. Even this podcast. I mean, we're now on our 12th year. I mean, 20 years ago, I would have had to have begged, some radio station. I would have had to gone and talk to networks and all that. Right?
yeah, who cares right now? You know, I got a microphone, I've got my computer, and we've got a podcast, and it's become so prevalent now.
Right. It's democratized. You know, and so much disruption happens because of that. I mean, YouTube disrupted like conventional video production, right?
And so now what you've done, what I'm excited about is you've actually brought in the conversation of hope, that there is hope for people who do feel hopeless. And when we talk about these generational refugees, that's what it's about.
I think there's so much inspiration in what we saw, not only through the film, but also at the event, right? The Sufra screening event of, you know, you have Maryam and this and her team of women who are following her and instilling their trust in her because they have hope in her. And she's just so strong and she perseveres and she doesn't give up. And in fact, she says in the film, you know, there is no plan B. If you just have to revert to plan A until it works out. And that's so inspiring because, you know, in our modern day hustle and our rat race, and we have like all these like different challenges that come up, you know, in the United States, we look at someone like Maryam, who she's in this refugee camp and like every barrier is like put in her way and she's overcoming them. And it's inspiring, right? It kind of takes us the time to reflect on ourselves of like, we should be able, what we think we can achieve in our day to day or our year to year, we can do so much more because we're so capable, right? Especially for women who a lot of time are doubting themselves of what they can achieve.
That's one thing that was very noticeable about Sufra, was that these were all women that were living in a truly, totally male dominated world, and they were able to succeed. So talk about some opportunities there. Right. And especially you, young woman who is brave, courageous, taking on really the establishment.
Yeah. I mean, like in the film, there was a scene where one of the women is talking about how she's happy to be part of Sufra so that she can make change for her family and provide some sort of better future and opportunity for them. And she talks about how her son sleeps all day. He's, you know, like 18 years old. He sleeps all day because he's not able to get a job. The Palestinian refugees are treated as like third class citizens. And he's lost hope. And I think what's interesting about women is, you know, women bear children. They're the mother. They kind of are the glue that keeps the family together. And there's this extra burden on their shoulders to do anything it takes to make sure their family is okay. And in fact, their family will be prosperous, right? And I'm sure her seeing her son like that is just devastating to her. And for Sufra giving her the hope that she can get her son out of this hopeless depression is pretty powerful. So you see that, you know, amidst that kind of hopelessness, the women tend to be very strong and resilient because there's this extra thing innate to them pushing them to make life better for their offspring. And I think that's really powerful. I think we underestimate, you know, how much power there is in women just from a standpoint of being a mom and all of that. And I by no means ever try to be, women dominated. Let's do this. Because I grew up with boys. I'm a tomboy through and through. I sometimes am like oblivious to like the bias that is towards women because I tend to have a thick skin and a very strong personality. But going through this tech startup and being in the male-dominated world of venture capital and tech and, you know, everything in between, I'm very much more aware of not only just like the major bias that's out there, but even the subtle bias that just happens in conversation or during the day, or it's out there. And I think we really need to identify it because, I was looking at some quotes kind of in preparation for this episode. And Malala is one of my like role models. And one thing that I love that she says is, she says, "I raise my voice not so that I can shout, but so that those without a voice can be heard." And I think that's just so powerful that, you know, we have to speak out. We have to stand up for the minority so that we can, you know, eventually make change.
And knowing you and working with you, I think that describes you. I mean, you've been doing that. And I think that's the difficult part for many people to understand. So you go out, you're an entrepreneur, you're doing a business. How do you make that transition to say, well, okay, there's some capital gains. I'm doing this because I'm in a capitalist environment. I can do this, but my heart does feel for these people. And it's not all about me. So yes, there are some gains. So you could live the capitalist dream, but how do you deal with people who are voiceless, who are quiet? How do you reach out to them? And I think you're solving that. You're actually, you've made that connection, connecting those dots.
Yeah, I mean, especially with like the cooks that we've brought on onto Dish Divi, like they're like family. Last month was my birthday and my co-founder surprised me. She's like, oh, I'm not gonna tell you what we're doing for your birthday. And I thought, okay, we're gonna go to lunch somewhere and she's not telling me. But she told all our cooks and they surprised me with this huge like potluck at a park and they all were there and they're like family, you know? And for us, yeah, we are a pro-profit commercial operation, which I think is great because that pushes us to be successful. But there's of course a way to have a human component to that, which I think tech has gotten a bad rap with it from that standpoint over the years.
Let's talk about that bad rap and what you're doing. Let's take a break right now. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Ani Tarosyan, co-founder and CEO of Dish Divi. Okay.
What did I tell you? Amazing? Well, there's more to come. There is absolutely more to come. But we take a break right now, as we do every week. We share a song, and you know what music does for me, I know it does for all of you. It puts us in touch with something beyond ourselves. Picked out a very special one this week. It's called Spirits in the Morning. It happens to be the week of the Holy Spirit, the week of Spirit, where we talk about Pentecost and what took place on Pentecost. And so on that occasion, I'm going to share with you this song by Contra. And well, listen, and I think you'll know why I chose it, okay? Here it is. Kantra. Not sure how you pronounce it. It's with a K. Kantra. Playing Spirits in the Morning. It is the song that I chose for this week because we're celebrating Pentecost, the festival of the Spirit, the feast of the Spirit, empowerment, where the disciples were empowered and became apostles, moving, shifting, the shifting from one who learns to one who takes it out and shares. And that's what we're talking about today and throughout the whole podcast. But this particular song, I think you understood why I chose it. The selection of instruments, the harmonies, and just the way it flowed. So if you enjoyed it, hey, support them. I'll have a link on today's show notes. Always support musicians because, well, they do something very special, sharing their God-given talents with all of us. Hey, let's get back to the interview with Ani Torosyan of Dishtim. Get into some of the more, let's say, about the more essential, the metaphysics behind Dish Divi, to talk about, like, really hope, about what it is that makes people tick, what drives them, what are opportunities out there. Ani, you spoke about the opportunities out there for women. Let's talk about some of the external hope factors, whether it's from others, your mentors, your teachers. What are the external elements to hope?
Yeah, I think it's important that, you know, we were just talking about how we need to have a voice so that those who don't have a voice can be heard. And a lot of that comes in the form of, you know, being a mentor, being a teacher, being a friend, right? Being a role model. And, you know, even going back into the situation of Malala, which her story is just beyond inspirational, but her father was her number one fan from the day that she was born. He instilled this innate drive in her to have the right to her education. He was a teacher. He ran this local village school. He stood up for the rights of his daughter and all the girls in the village. And, you know, her seeing that gave her hope amidst being controlled by the Taliban, amidst being in this like hopeless situation. So these external hope factors, if you will, sometimes we think, oh, well, what can I do? I'm one person. Believe it or not, just going out of your mundane day-to-day operations and doing something extra for someone and being a mentor to them and being this sense of a place that they can get mentorship from is really important. So, you know, I think hope kind of is divided into two sections. It's this external hope in the form of these teachers and these parents and people who inspire you. But then also we have, you know, internal hope, that innate desire in us to do better, to have a better life for us, for our family, to get away from negative situations. So a lot of times when your back is against the wall, that's when the human capability is at its maximum because you kind of had no other choice. So I think it's really important to contribute to your community and provide that sense of hope for others around you who really need it.
Do you think that innate hope is always there, is always present? Does it need to be conditioned? Does everybody have it? Or do you think they were born with that? What do you think about that innate?
It's a tough question, you know, because my parents, like a lot of Armenian immigrants in the United States, were immigrants and they were refugees leaving a bad situation in Iran. And they did that to give my brother and I a better life. And, you know, we grew up, of course, not having a lot of money in the early years because they were immigrants to this country. But as a child, I never sensed we were poor or we were struggling because, you know, my parents took that burden on them. So, you know, as a child, I think my environment allowed me to always have that innate sense of drive and hope because, again, I had those external factors of good parents and, you know, good environment or whatnot. So I personally don't have experience in a situation where there's a lot of hopelessness and a lot of barriers. But I would think that the human a human being just naturally has that drive to survive and to improve and to evolve. And I think, you know, a negative environment obviously breaks that down bit by bit. And it's very difficult for me to give advice on how to get out of those extremely dire situations, because I'm not experienced in that. But what I can say is, what drives me day to day is, look, I'm so lucky just being in America and having these resources and being a woman in California, where it's sort of like this top 1% of the world in terms of opportunity. So for me, it's important to not just utilize that for personal gain, but to really create this platform that could eventually have global impact. You know, we're thinking of, we had talked to some organizations, even in Armenia, who were thinking about, well, how can we use, let's say, the DishDivi model or the platform to provide economic opportunity to the women in remote villages in Armenia, where tourists can come and try and buy their food and then create this economic opportunity for them. So, you know, from a vision standpoint, we do have a lot of big lofty goals to have a global impact. And I think, you know, that's one way that I can contribute to making sure people continue to have hope.
Well, if anybody can do it, I know you can. I mean,
it takes a village, you know, it's not just me, it's like a whole movement. So,
well, it brings up the question of time. There's also, you know, we fight against time. It's the most valuable of our assets,
yep.
Commodities. And you realize at some point in your life that there's just a certain amount of time that you do have, whether it's in a day, in a year, or in your lifetime. How do you manage that? I mean, these are big, big goals that you have. And I certainly think that they're achievable goals. But you also realize that there's all kinds of obstacles, bureaucratic obstacles, as well as just time, tiredness. How do you manage that personally? How do you get through figuring out that you're going to get to that goal?
Yeah. You know, I think I try to use every minute of my day very efficiently. Even if I have to like go pick up something from someone's home, it gets put into my calendar. So for me, sometimes I get impatient where I'm thinking, okay, I want things to happen quicker because I'm so type A and always on the go. Then you look back and you look at from year to year, how much evolution and progress has been in your career, in your life. I think it's all about building habits every day, you know, being consistent. And like, if this is your goal, then you have to have sort of small mini goals in between, and you have to get some mini achievements to keep that engine going so that you can get to those bigger goals. Because there, big change doesn't happen day to day, week to week, or even year to year. It usually happens decade to decade, right? And in order for that to happen, you have to have a lot of discipline to work hard every day. And people think I'm crazy. The ones who know me personally think like I just have extra more energy than other people. I think it's just that I really enjoy what I do. I'm super passionate about it. And I took a lot of risk early on in my career and resigned from corporate jobs that people thought were like amazing, because at my age, like most people couldn't get that position. But for me, I just had it in my head and in my heart of what I wanted to achieve. And entrepreneurism and innovation was always forefront. So doing what you're passionate about, having small goals every day, and then working hard. And then, if, you know, sometimes you don't get to that huge goal. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, but you need to enjoy the process.
You know, in just knowing you, and I know your degree in biomedical and electrical engineering, mm-hmm. I mean, and then all of a sudden you're doing DishDivi. Oh, and degrees from USC, we should add to that, yeah, from this fine institution, USC. Mm-hmm. And here you are really doing something, I don't know, completely different. How do you put that together? How do you put that? Because I get a lot of people asking about this. I've studied this, I've done this, but you know, my heart's somewhere else. Did you have to go through that? Did you have to consciously make that jump, or did it just flow that you went from your degree to where you're at right now?
It's a funny question, because I think for years, maybe even till now, my mom thinks I'm crazy. Because when I left the corporate world, I left it to open up a medical spa. This was in 2007. And I left Medtronic, which is one of the biggest medical device companies in the world. I was a product manager there where I was 23. My counterparts were like Stanford MBA alums and whatnot. So she's like, you're doing what? Like, how does this even make sense? And then I was doing freelance consulting for building digital technologies for clients across the country, because I taught myself like Photoshop, Illustrator, graphic design, user experience design. This is over the course of 15 years, of course, but I would stay up till like 4 a.m, reading books, watching YouTube tutorials, and taught myself then website design and then app design and then, you know, branding design, all these things, which then culminated to when I was thinking of running with Dish Divi. I literally in 2 weeks brain dumped the entire platform from a idea standpoint onto paper and then designed it on the computer, and then our developers could run with it. So to me, that evolution over 15 years from leaving the corporate world, opening up a medical spa, becoming a consultant, seems very natural. But then, you know, when I tell people, they're like, how did you do this? And where'd you go from there? But I think that's kind of attest to the entrepreneur's mindset of a lot of times you have these big visions and things just seem so clear to you, and you get frustrated why other people don't see it that way. And so now I've become very comfortable with that, where I feel like it's kind of like a superpower.
Tell me a little bit about how you see the world, because I think someone like you, you've got these big aspirations. You definitely have a proven track record of how you can evolve with the times. And today we are in some really very strange times, at least to me, because I guess I've seen more of that history than you have or others have. But we're at a time right now where, and I don't want to get into politics. I really am not interested in the political complexion, but I am interested in where we are headed. We are seeing more and more right now, more and more people becoming inward. Refugees is a big issue. We've never seen refugee crisis like this in the world. We have our political divides unlike any other time. We're alienated from one another. How do you see this world today, and especially the plight of women in this world?
I'm a big advocate of having impact in your local community, because especially after the last presidential election, we see so many people just go on Facebook or go on social media where they have like really no repercussions and are just ranting about something that's happening in Washington, something that is or is not happening all the way in Washington, D.C., that they have no control over. And then that same person is not helping their local community. They're not involved. They're not doing community service. They're not engaging in local events. They're not being a mentor to someone. So to me, you know, I think that we've gone so much to this, like, I don't even know, like this kind of like rant negative space of let's just criticize the what's happening in politics, as opposed to me as a single human being. How can I make impact, and how can I help the whatever side that you're trying to help? How can I make positive change in my local community? Because believe me, that will have at some point national and global ripple effect, because you're putting this energy into this positive energy into your community, into your world. So I think that we should really focus on the local and try to make impact there, instead of wasting our energy like ranting about like all of these things that are happening in Washington, D.C. that we necessarily aren't taking action on. And of course, there's people who take national action and they have the resources to do that. But the average person just doesn't have that. So how can we help our local communities? Because I think if we're all doing that in synchrony across the nation, that will have positive impact.
I want to add to that, you know, by the way people are coming off and the criticism, it's almost releasing the control and the power. By criticizing these politicians, it's almost like admitting it's all in their hands when it's not. It never should have been. It never can be. We relinquish that power and give it to them by saying that, oh, look, they haven't done their job. Well, what have we done? Where are we at?
You need to fix this for me. Well, what are you doing for yourself or for your own community?
And I appreciate you saying that about Facebook. It's one of my pet annoyances that, you know, on the same page of you're shown pictures of your grandson fishing with you, you're also talking about the global impact of the administration's tariff on some country. It's like they are not equal, you know, and the way we see them on Facebook or on Instagram pictures, it's like, oh, these are all equal. They're not equal, you know. I'm glad you're having a good time.
It's extremely easy to like something about some movement on Facebook, but did you actually take some offline activity to take action to actually cause impact on that issue that you're so passionate that you click the like button on?
And so go specifically now about women, and I want to hear your comments about, because you really have done such a beautiful job of incorporating all this, bringing this and giving that empowerment to the women and via tech. And that's a unique, that's almost like a niche that you have. It's like tech and women empowerment. Can you talk a little bit about how you put all of this together in a global way so that it is going to impact the world? Because I do believe it. I do believe what you are doing is going to affect the world on larger than this neighborhood that you're in. So how do you see that evolving?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started Dish Divi, it was really this idea of how can we help people eat better in a more traditional way, and why can't we tap into our neighbors making great food, and I'm sure she's making enough to feed an army, why can't we tap into, that's kind of how it just started. But then as soon as it started, I realized, whoa, every cook we're bringing on board, most of them women, have this amazing story. Some who had to escape from, again, like as refugees, whether it was from they left Lebanon. We have cooks who we have a cook who is Indian background, but he was actually he's a male. He's adopted by Italian parents, and so he grew up in Italy. So he looks very Indian, but he makes the most delicious, authentic Italian food you could have. We have a chef who is a marketing manager for Intel by day during the week, and then on weekends sells traditional Goan cuisine, which is like a province that has Portuguese influence in India, and then sells out every weekend, and is an amazing singer. So he's called the singing chef. We have a Japanese woman who's from Kobe, Japan, and has all these authentic experiences that she's brought from Japan. You know, we see after onboarding maybe 10, 20, 30 cooks, we're like, every person has an amazing story. And that's really when it clicked for me that kind of how Mariam in Sufra says that carrying the burden of making this successful for all the women who depend on her just gives her so much perseverance and energy to move forward. I feel the same. I relate to her so much in the sense that our cooks are really counting on us to make this successful and make it work. And I think about all of their backgrounds and everything that they've gone through and what they've shared with me. And it's a very personal thing for me to make their life better.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited because you're just using the power of resources all around you. You know, that's what's so exciting. It's like, what's that expression? If you've got lemons in life, you make lemonade. Well, this is far beyond that, lemons. I mean, you've got a lot, but you're using that. We always think that, okay, if life gives us this bad rap, then let's try to make the best. But you do have so many great things around you. We should be even greater. And so I'm very excited how you're doing that. Did that come?
And I think, I think what you're trying, how I see what you're saying is like authenticity is at our core, whether it's the food that we create, whether it's the story that we say. I mean, none of it's like this commercialized thing. Like even, you know, all these videos that we just put out, so many folks are saying like, oh, like who scripted that for you? None of it was scripted. Like these were just the cooks actually just sitting down and speaking. In fact, in one of the scenes, Linda, this American lady who's an amazing cook, such a sweetheart, she lives in La Cunada, she started crying and being teary-eyed on camera saying, you know, I'm very thankful to Dish Divi for giving me this opportunity to have a business and have a sense of sort of appreciation from my community. So I think authenticity is very important to us and always maintaining that like true north that we try to do. So, you know, taking whether it's people's what could be perceived as bad experiences in their life or good experiences. It's just like, what's authentic and how can we tell that story?
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. First of all, everyone who's listening, there will be links on our show notes to Ani's work, to Dish Divi, also to Sufra. It's available on one of the streaming services. We'll put links over there. Are there any parting shots, anything you want to leave us with before we say goodbye? And thank you very much.
Yeah, no, this has been wonderful. I think it's a great discussion. And obviously, there's so much that could be said about empowerment and hope and women. But, you know, if there's anyone out there who feels inspired by what we're doing or wants to learn more, we love meeting new people. You can always reach out to us. I know there's going to be show notes, so that's great too. And if you're in a state that's not California and you kind of want to get a home cooking movement in your state, reach out to us. We kind of have best practices on how you can do that and kind of get that started.
Fantastic. And that's what I assume is done also in other countries. Like when you said Armenia is thinking about it, so you have those best practices ready to go packaged and available.
Yeah, I mean, from an operation standpoint, we're not available to act on that global vision yet. We know it'll happen sometime in the future, but getting discussions started and getting ideas flowing, it's never too early to do that.
Fantastic. Ani, I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for making this time and being with
us. Absolutely.
And God bless you and all the work that you do. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Well, what do you think? Wasn't that wild? Ani Torosyan. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope more importantly that it gave you some food, Dish Divi food, well, more food for thought. Thought about what we can do, what each of us can do, the opportunities that are out there, the empowerment that awaits not only for ourselves, but opportunities for us to share the goodness that's in us with others. That was a very special interview for me, and we will have links on today's show notes. Do check them out. Do inquire, get involved, and I know we have people listening from all over the world. Take some time to study. Look at what they're doing. We'll have also a link to the Sufra movie. Take a look at that movie too, and if you're inclined, do connect with these wonderful, wonderful people. Well, the piano player is here, so what can we do? Just got to move out of the way and let Susie make her announcements. I'll be back in a couple moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vasquez.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to our listeners for all of your wonderful words, your sentiments, everything you write to me, your prayers. They go a long way. And, of course, your support. Hey, let me tell you something. I am sorry. I cannot get to everyone's email. And I really mean this. I really try. My intentions are good. Don't give up on me, okay? But I love reading your comments, your expressions. You can write us at feedback@epostle.net. Epostle, easy to remember. That's apostle with an E. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So drop us a line. Love to hear from you. We've got a lot of things coming up in the next few months, so do stay connected with us. We're launching a very special newsletter coming up in a couple weeks, I believe, is the launch of that, and definitely by the end of June. So look for that. If you're not on our mailing list, do sign up at our website. We are on all the socials. Wherever you look, we're there, as well as at the mothership, inhisshoes.org. This weekend happens to be Pentecost. It is the celebration of the church. I'll be celebrating at St. Leon Cathedral, but wherever you are in the world, know that we are celebrating together. We are connected, and I treasure this bond and this opportunity to share with you. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I want top minutes.